Welcome to Beyond the BEO, an event planner's podcast. I'm your host, Shannon Doerr Nicholson. This episode is brought to you by The Right Stuff Agency, a digital marketing agency making your business sound as good as it looks. This week, my guest is Stephen Handyside, the mastermind behind VUnite.com, specializing in bringing large groups together in virtual theme spaces. Stephen and his team have designed an event solution that makes setting up hybrid events seamless. A solution built for event planners where they can set up their events in three easy steps, choosing from event template, themes, areas of engagement, and the metrics that they need to run a successful event. They've designed a 24/7 support for event planners that may need a little or full support to manage their hybrid events. This week's conversation is really interesting because I think that I still have the terrible, terrible memories of really poorly planned virtual events early on in the pandemic, where we were just doing the best we could. We didn't have the right resources. And we're now seeing this shift to polished hybrid and virtual events and really figuring out where they belong in the grand scheme of events. I don't think that they're out to replace in-person events. I think that they have very specific use cases. And Stephen and I chat about why you would use a hybrid event, what types of events they can be great for, and how the technology has really improved over the last few years. So let's get into it. Thank you so much, Stephen, for joining us. I'm really excited for our conversation today about hybrid, but I would like you to get started with just letting us know who you are and what you do.
Yeah, thank you so much for inviting me to the podcast. Yeah, my name's Stephen Handyside. I'm a New Zealander, but I have lived overseas in the UK and the US for 20 years. I run a business called VUnite. It is a virtual events, onboarding, training and marketing tool. We specialize in bringing large groups of people together in virtual theme spaces. But today it's been interesting, a big change from doing virtual conferences and trade shows to doing very much around a hybrid model, which I'm excited to talk to you about today.
That's great. I think, you know, it's been such a journey over the last 3 years for virtual and hybrid. And you know, I often joke with my husband that if I never see the inside of a celebrity's house again, I'll be very happy because we're so bombarded in early days of lockdown. But I think people are starting to figure out where it works and where they need it. And so now that, you know, we are into 3 years since the, you know, outbreak and initial lockdowns, how do you think that's going to impact in 2023? Like, what do you think now that we've been doing virtual, we've been trying hybrid, we're figuring it out, what do you see coming in for 2023?
Yeah, it's interesting. I find it extremely interesting what's happened over the last couple of years. I think that in 2020, it was the year of, I feel like it was a bit of a disaster. Obviously, everyone panicked, especially that already had conferences booked. And basically, events companies were trying to not lose their clients and putting together extremely bad software, which put a bad taste in a lot of people's mouths in 2020. An Australian friend and I, we had this crazy idea about 5-6 years ago. Once we saw webinars starting to be used a lot more, we thought, do you know what? Now's the time, because we had this idea about 10 years ago to put together a virtual conference. And we predominantly had worked in the healthcare sector. And so we put together this huge global conference. We bootstrapped everything together, used lots of different technologies before we created our own software in 2020. But so we had really sort of planned out what an event could look like virtually. So we had to really write the roadmap. But yeah, I found in 2020, as I say, it put a lot of bad taste in a lot of event organizers' mouths. But I think 21, we saw some really great experiences coming out from a virtual side. 22, a lot have still 50% of events tend to be virtual. There's only still about 20% hybrid. But I think there has been this race to go back to in-person events. And I think, you know, even with attendees, they're like, no, no, we want to do in-person. Events organizers going, no, we just want to do in-person. And they may obviously still do a virtual component to it. I think what we're going to see in 23, 24 and onwards, there are so many events that we all used to travel to prior to the pandemic. And I remember like every month I would be traveling all around the world. And I actually quite enjoyed not being able to travel for 3 or 4 months during the pandemic. And I think people are really going to realize in the next couple of years that virtual really did have a good place to, you know, for you to be able to access global speakers, global content that you wouldn't necessarily get to, especially those in maybe third world countries that don't have the money to go to Paris or Monaco for these big, large events. So I think there is going to be this, I think, again, this rotation back to and this drive towards hybrid events in 23 and 24. I think it's going to be later on in 23 when people really do realize that, do you know what? I would like to attend some things virtually, but also attend things in person. So it's going to be those companies. So for example, we're partnering with in-person event companies because I think it's about when you're running an event, having that seamless experience and integration with software for the virtual audience and then the in-person events organizers as well.
I think that's right. I think the biggest challenge I've seen with the hybrid is trying to accommodate both and not being a in-person event with a virtual component and not being a virtual event with an in-person component and really catering to both of those audiences because they require different things. You know, those in the room require different types of information and a different flow, and hybrid need someone to also still tell them what's going on. You know, one of the best ones I've seen is where they had a virtual host who was basically the MC for just the virtual folks, right? And so I think it was about, you know, not making the virtual attendees feel like the afterthought, which I think for so long it was, right? It was, oh, well, you're just watching what's happening in the room. Well, that's not really participating in the event. So, you know, maybe we can talk about, you know, when does hybrid work and when is hybrid a great option? Can it be for every event? Should, like, what considerations when someone is saying, okay, are we going to put in the time and effort and money to do it hybrid or stay virtual? Like, what are those kind of considerations that people need to be thinking about?
I think, first of all, you need to look at who is your audience and what, in terms of a virtual audience and an in-person audience, the needs are slightly different. So one, you sort of need to understand that. I think one of the misunderstandings sometimes is that, you know, hybrid, by having a hybrid option, it's going to cost a lot of money and there's a lot of extra work to do. Not if today with the technology the way it is, you can create things that, again, are very simple to set up, seamless, that can add so much more engagement to your in-person event. I think, you know, the real benefits of hybrid, it's really given events organizers the ability to attract a global audience to their actual in-person events. Also attract global speakers, which they couldn't afford in the past to actually pay for their accommodation, pay for these huge fees of them actually speaking at the conference. They still have to pay them for the virtual component, but it's a lot less. So I think the access for education and global speakers to this quality is, I think hybrid is fantastic for that. I think, you know, again, having a hybrid thing always is great for the environment, you know, being able to attract this much larger global audience outside that domestic market. Obviously, it's obviously very carbon neutral, more environmentally friendly, sort of reducing, you know, travel costs, I think, as well. Again, I know from my perspective is, you know, especially going now into this, they're calling it possibly a recession, is people are really going to be a little bit more conscious in terms of what they're spending their money on and can they actually attend all of these events. So I think you know, it's so essential to have that virtual component, because I think what people are going to find is their attendance is going to drop slightly. Again, you know, things, COVID is still around. It's pretty rampant right now across, you know, the US, even New Zealand. So again, people are still nervous in traveling. So again, I think that the hybrid part is important. And I think the metrics, which I think a lot of event companies, they do forget that the metrics that you can get by putting people through a virtual component that really replicates what your in-person event's doing, but so much more. And we'll go into more details in terms of what those hybrid events, it's not just live streaming a speaker into the platform. There's a lot more to it to make a hybrid event successful, but also to increase engagement. But in the back end, getting all these amazing metrics of what content people are interested, how long are they staying? You know, where are they moving around? You know, are they interested in the sponsors? What are they clicking on? So it gives the event organizers so much more details that they can turn into marketing insights for the next year.
And that's such a great point, because I know one of the greatest challenges I've always had as an event planner, and I know it's not just me, is really getting people to participate in feedback. And, you know, they'll tell you, you know, at the registration table, oh, this was great, or they might bring an issue to you. And you're like, can you please, please fill out the survey, please put it in the survey. Yeah. And, you know, of course they leave, and even though it's in their email, it's buried by the time they get back to the office. And so, you know, you're so right that technology does give you that ability to see, okay, this is when they clicked in, this is how long they stayed in each session. Because I do think that attention span, at least me personally, when it's virtual, it's much shorter than when I'm in person, right? And I think that, you know, you even need to consider that when you're building your program for people. And I think that it's also that people, I know I've gone to virtual events, you know, more in 2020, where you'd get there and the tech is a mess and it's like, oh, never mind, like I'm out, right? You know, whereas you're in person, if something's not working, you're there already. Whereas virtually, it's like, okay, no, I'm going to go to the next thing, right? So, you know, yeah, the technology, although it can be a challenge if it's not done properly, it does give you that much more insight. And you mentioned sponsors, like it can be really hard to show the value of your sponsors when, you know, you're going back next year and saying, oh, we want you to participate. Well, we might say, okay, but, you know, we didn't get that many leads, or no one came by the booth, or no one clicked on this thing. Like, having that information is so valuable when you're going back to say, okay, let's build it where it is valuable. Oh, we saw that this time is when people were really engaged and the most people were on the site. So let's build your sponsorship around that. And I think using those insights can help you build it out.
I think just adding on to that, you know, when you're creating that event, I think it was really interesting in 2020 when everyone had planned out their physical events, and then they all came to us and said, we want to do this. And you can do that, but it's just different when it's virtual. One of the biggest events we ever had, it was the first event we ran on our new software. So it was a little bit nerve-wracking. And it was still the most complicated event we have done today, but it was for a really large dermatology society, and it was their 50-year celebration. So pressure was on to get it right, and they were just gutted that they couldn't do a 50-year celebration. I understand that in person. So we had to try and replicate what they could do, and we had lots of different areas for gamification, and it was just... there were so many different rooms. There was 150 different ticket types because, again, they hadn't realized.
that stresses me out just to hear. That's so many ticket types.
And they only realized that in the few days before. And so you could imagine our tech team were all, you know, racing around. And so I think, you know, from the virtual standpoint, working out the flow is really, really important. And so, you know, when you said it was quite interesting, you said, you know, my attention span is less online. Well, a lot of the time when you're in a physical seminar, you're stuck really, because especially if you're in the front or in the middle of the road, you can't really leave. But again, what is your attention span like during that live session as well, right? So even with virtual, I think being able to cut down a lot of the long speaker content, if it's not live and you're doing semi-live or pre-recorded, is just breaking down the content a little bit more, giving people the opportunity to have breaks in between that they can go off to, you know, different areas, maybe to learn a few more things in their own time. This younger generation, this we did a big paper with some other people in terms of what generations are doing in terms of their learning. And, you know, in the past, I think our generation, I'm in my early 40s and stuff, was all about, you know, we like, give us the platform and we'll do our own learning in our own time. But this new generation coming up, they're looking for lots of content, but in a much more smaller way. So they like lots of smaller bits of content and they have to be highly engaged all of the time. And so when you look at doing your virtual component, and I think where it went wrong and where there's a lot of suboptimal type of platforms there is they're very much like a website. But that's so wrong in terms of, you know, creating that engagement in a virtual environment is, if you look at the average time someone spends on a website, which is about 2 minutes, but then a gamer who's playing games spends over 2 hours. And so you look at what now virtual software has actually done. And so we really place an emphasis on themed events. And so we create all these experiences on cruise ships. We did something in the Eiffel Tower in Paris and, you know, all sorts of cool things because, again, it's trying to keep that engagement extremely high for that those people watching at home. So, yeah.
Yeah, I on another episode, we were talking more specifically about video and how video is just getting shorter and shorter and shorter, right? You know, Instagram and TikTok, they're all favoring reels and these short videos because, I mean, of course, there will always be a place for YouTube, but it doesn't surprise me that especially the younger generation is kind of looking for those, you know, highlight those nuggets of consumable, like easy to digest information because that's what they're growing up with. That's what they're seeing online. They can learn how to bake a cake in 30 seconds on a TikTok or an Instagram reel. So why not that for everything else, right? So I think that's so, so interesting. So maybe you can talk about, you know, what options are available because I think that if you're like me and have not done a lot of hybrid events or only went to a virtual event kind of during the pandemic, that was very much a, this should have been in person and we've just made a landing page with a lot of links and too much confusion. Like what is possible? You're talking about building environments. And so how do you make that easy to do without kind of overwhelming people? And like, what are options that are available that you're really finding a lot of engagement on?
Yeah. So, are you talking more about sort of the key components really of what you should have in a platform? Is that right to make it?
Yeah,
successful?
I think like key components and you know you're talking you mentioned like different rooms and different venues of a virtual event. So if you're someone who's only seen the landing page version of a virtual webinar or virtual session, like what are people able to do out there now?
Yeah, so I think with hybrid, it's interesting. I'm a big believer, and this is, you know, one of the other points that you had made, you know, what's sort of the new hybrid options. I don't know whether this is a new hybrid option, but what we had spoke with a lot of our clients and it's been extremely successful is, you know, not putting as much pressure by having everything at doing a virtual component at the same time as the live component. Is we get some of our clients 30 to 60 days later to run a separate event. They record a lot of the content from the live event, put it into the virtual platform, but they can time it so it still runs and feels like it's live. But it gives people, the ones that were at the in-person event, a second chance because a lot of the time you go to an in-person event, they're great for networking. And that's what a lot of people do. And they don't always get to attend a lot of the workshops they would have liked to or gone and seen or done business with a lot of the sponsors and exhibitors. So running it at a different time can be powerful, and especially for those also that couldn't attend. So just giving you those thoughts as well, it works extremely well, takes a bit of pressure off, but just gives you that second chance to engage with that audience. And the sponsors we've seen pay an extra between 20 to 30% more because they get a second shot. at a different audience, but also a second touch point with those that attended. But I would just say with some of the key components, I think we're seeing more and more looking at gamification to keep that audience alive. What I think one of the points you brought up as well is that, you know, that the virtual audience doesn't get ignored, or it's an add-on to an in-person event. And I think with regards to that, one of the really successful events we did for a global medical company was we built the Aria Casino. And so the event was at the casino itself, but what we did was we built a virtual replica of the casino. So the rooms looked and feel the same, but there was other extensions to the to the rooms. And so it was almost like that, yeah, that treasure hunt. And there was that virtual host, and they ran a competition for those at home. And it was, and even the people at the in-person event were talking about how jealous they were that they weren't on the virtual event, because it was so cool and it was a different experience. And what they found when they left the virtual component open for, you know, another sort of 10 days, they had a lot of those in-person people going on and going, oh my God, this was such a cool experience. So I think, again, thinking outside the box with what the look and feel of that event, we're biased because, as I say, that's what we specialize in, is creating themes. Or like a big university we work with, we created a virtual replica and representation of their campus. And so they run their events inside the clock tower, which was never, you can't in a physical world actually have an event in the clock tower. But in a virtual world, you can create as much space as you want and make people feel like they are in a Harry Potter castle, or they're in, you know, somewhere else. So yeah, I think theming, gamification, the ability to also communicate and connect with different audiences in different parts of the world. So have a look at that as well. You know, again, one of their large global clients, they wanted to connect with people in China. So we connect, we have a little app connector with WeChat, Viber through Asia app. And so those were key components for people to be able to communicate in and around the live webinar content. So looking for software platforms that can integrate with other communication tools. Also, it's important to live stream to multiple platforms at once. So, you know, live streaming through the platform, you know, can it connect with all of our social media applications at the same time? So a lot of diversity, flexibility in the software that you're using, that really helps whatever's happening at that in-person event, not just to be one very sort of directional, but it's sort of multi-purpose, and it's really catering for that global audience and, in, as I say, live streaming to multiple audience and connecting with them in the appropriate way.
Well, and it sounds like, because you've mentioned, you know, planning for global audiences, and I'll be honest, in my experience, my events have always been focused on North America. So I haven't really needed to deal with time zones outside of, you know, the 3 to 5 hours across North America. But I bet that hybrid really has a place when you're trying to accommodate different time zones and not having to have someone get up in the middle of the night or feel like they've missed out because they're in an off time zone from when the event is being hosted. It sounds like you're really able to kind of, for lack of a better word, like democratize the experience. If you are able to either repurpose, like you mentioned, hosting it a couple weeks later, so now you're able to repurpose that content in a way that is better for, you know, all time zones, you know, across, maybe you're adding translation, you're adding that type of experience and really making it more accessible to a global audience.
That's right. Yeah. No, I think internationally, it's a must. I mean, I think with the big global organizations we deal with, they still see a really strong purpose for running things in a hybrid fashion, especially when they want to increase the frequency of their events or increase the frequency of their touch points with their customers or their key personnel from different parts of the world. I mean, why wouldn't you, you know, in terms of, yes, you know, have that one, you know, meeting in person a year, but why not have the other three virtually? Because again, it just gives people the ability to also, when they're attending a virtual event to come in and out. They can really just attend the content that is relevant to them. Whereas an in-person event, when we're there, you know, not everything is relevant, but you're there, you're stuck there if, in a way. But I know with, you know, a lot of, again, individuals that actually go to events, sometimes they go, do you know what? You know, I go all the way, I fly there, and there's only 20% of content that's relevant. And, you know, their time is precious. So again, I think that's a really key component for virtual, just being a little bit more targeted. And that's where on the platform is having it separated it out into different breakout rooms or different virtual spaces where people can attend this particular area of subject matter that they're interested in, rather than just a brain dump of everything.
Yeah, and I think you're right too, that I've seen that now, that some things are staying, just changing the cadence of in-person and adding a virtual, instead of doing it, you know, four times a year in person, doing it once or twice a year. So you're still able to meet the people and then have those connections when you're back into the virtual setting, but have even more of an impact with those, you know, kind of dispersing the budgets to have different impacts and better experiences, instead of like, okay, well, we do it every quarter, so now we have to do it every quarter in the exact same way we've always done it, right? And so being a little bit more creative and using a mixture to really drive the goal of the event.
That's right. You know, and you had mentioned, you know, just there's just to cover quickly, you know, just a couple of myths that are out there still with, you know, one of the things that always, it did make me laugh, but, you know, again, it's very short-minded, but a lot of events organizers felt that, you know, by having a virtual component, is it going to reduce their numbers to their in-person events? You know, when you think about it, it does make sense, but over the last few years, it's been completely the opposite. I think it's a different audience once again. You know, the audience that will attend virtually, normally it's someone that is new to the event, and they want a taster, and they might not want to spend all the money in going to the, you know, the in-person event. So I think it's a great way for those newbies. But secondly, I think also the one of the other myths that I thought was interesting was that for sponsors, and I think there has been a difficulty in software being able to deliver a great experience for the connection between sponsors and attendees. And there is nothing in this world that is better than meeting someone in person, you know, the handshake. You know, a lot of companies will go and take their potential clients or good clients out for dinners. And, you know, it's a fantastic networking in person. But the technology today is really, really good. And again, when you're running an in-person event, having something that is virtual, now it doesn't have to be just for that limited time. You can have, like with some of the clients we've got, they have a virtual marketplace that's open all year round. And so it's constantly available where attendees in and around the event or at the event, they can scan a QR code and then up comes this virtual booth of that particular company. And so they can learn and click around the content, but then there might be a direct book an appointment with a sales rep. And so I think with some of the platforms, it hasn't really catered for the sponsors and left a bad taste, I think. But there are really good platforms out there that can really connect the in-person and virtual environment for sponsors. And the metrics that you can get with the virtual component is just, and we've already spoken about, is just amazing. We talk about gamification, but for gamification, the benefit for the organizer or the administrator is the ability to collect all of this data of where people are moving through the platform, what content they're interested in, being able to give the sponsors a report of all of the things that attendees have clicked on, what they're interested in. So then the salespeople can actually go back with a much more targeted approach to what the attendee was interested virtually, but you can't do that in person. So there are some really, really excellent elements by having that virtual component, you know, to increase that engagement in and around the in-person event.
For sure. So I know we're coming up on time, so I want to give you the opportunity to tell us, you know, if there's something that we kind of walk away with, and you know, what is the biggest lesson you hope we've learned today about hybrid events? You know, is it that we need to reconsider how it integrates with our live events? Is it the attendee experience? Like, what is it that you're thinking, okay, if it's anything we've talked about today, this is what you need to know about hybrid events and the future, like you said, because 2023, I want to talk about 2023, but in reality, you mentioned 2024, I'm sure people are starting to plan. So what is it that we need to know before we go?
Yeah, I think hybrid events are not going away. I think, you know, we've seen the benefits in virtual, although everyone's pushing back to that in-person. What you're going to see is clients are going to be demanding that they want a virtual component to it, because more and more as this younger generation's coming up as well, is we really do need to cater for them. So as I say, with virtual, it's all about how do we enhance, how do we optimize the experience of our in-person event? It's not there to replace it, but how can we get better results for our clients by having that virtual component, but mapping it out in a way that really makes sense for a virtual audience. And it's not an add-on, as you mentioned itself. So I'm excited by the future. I think, you know, the technology is constantly advancing. I think, you know, also any of the events organizers or planners that have sort of been bitten in the past by software, it has gone a long way. And I think really look for the software that, I know we've had a big focus on just making it so simple for event planners to go in, set it up and experience very, very quickly and just connect it with whatever technology they're running in their in-person events. So yeah, user friendliness and navigation is so important when it comes to virtual.
I agree, because I am the person that, if I can't do it in a few clicks, I'm gone. And I'm usually pretty good, but it is true. Like, you need to make it as easy. And I think it was the same for in person too. And you just have to continue that. There's a reason we send several no before you goes, right? That's because you have to reiterate and remind people. And so I think that the easier you can make it for everyone, the better it'll be. So thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me today. If people want to learn more about how to, you know, they've heard the conversation, they're like, okay, I'm sold, I need a hybrid option, where can they find out more information?
Yeah, so you can go to v-unite, UNITE.com. There's lots of, you know, good articles on there. Again, you know, we sort of cover everything from the hybrid events, but also these ongoing experiences now that people are using for training and onboarding and marketing as well. So yeah, so look forward to speaking to anyone, more than happy to speak to anyone in the new year if you're interested in running any types of hybrid events. My email is Stephen with a PH at v-unite.com.
Perfect. And we'll have all those links in the show notes so that people can find them easily. So thank you so much for taking the time.
Yeah, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Take care. Bye.
Thanks so much for listening. Follow us on social media and share your thoughts on this week's episode. This episode was brought to you by The Right Stuff Agency. Rate, review, and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Thanks for listening. Until next time.